This is Basalon Cycling, the podcast that brings you on thrilling adventures in the world of cycling, ultra cycling, and bikepacking. I'm your host, Sherry. Today's episode is brought to you by Basalon Coffee. More info in the link in the description. Joining me today is Max Grise, ultra cyclist, bikepacker, and founder of GraphGraph, a community-driven cycling adventure and everything about bikes. Welcome to the show, Max.
Thank you for having me, Sherry.
So, wow, it's incredible to see all the races and adventures you go to. So can you tell us a bit more about your route in ultra races, bikepacking, and how everything started?
How everything started? I talk about this a lot these days, which is funny. So apparently I checked back, and during school there was the federal state championships of trail running at some point. It was 28 kilometers. And a few friends in school, we had this bet where we said, like, well, you could never finish that. You could never run that. And I think I was 12 or 13. Mm-hmm. And I did. Like, I started training, running, and I finished it. And, well, obviously there wasn't a lot of competition in the under 17 classes. So...
yeah,
I was up ahead and got hooked into sports, kind of, because, you know, like, it was addictive to feel like, okay, like, you're really good at something.
Yeah.
And then went through half marathon, marathon, and decided, like, okay, like, off-road is more my thing. And then eventually my cousin crashed on his road bike, and he gave his road bike to me because he didn't want it anymore.
Oh, wow.
And I realized that cycling is maybe, like, a bit faster. I can get further, and it's more adrenaline than running. So I started the classical road cycling career. And yeah, I mean, that went quite well. I think it taught me a lot, and it really helped me in a lot of things. But I had to realize that I'm not really at home in that scene. And quit at some point. And only, like, years later, when all of the gravel bike hype and stuff came up, we started to basically use them as, like, faster mountain bikes and do, like, multi-day trips, like, you know, like, crossing the Alps in multiple days on, like, cyclocross bikes at the time with a backpack. I cycled across North America on an old steel bike, and was possible. And yeah, then eventually we decided, like, oh, like, would it be possible to cycle 500 kilometers in a day? And then we kind of did that. And I don't know, I felt like I nearly died during that experience. Like, this thing where you, like, arrive at home and, like, for 2 weeks you're just completely smashed. But still, like, in my head, it was a massive thing to realize, oh, wow, that's possible. You can cover that distance. And then the Silk Road Mountain Race in 2018, I followed it on social media, and completely captivated me. The stories of people dropping out in snowstorms, having breakdowns of tech, and the culture of nomadic people in Kyrgyzstan, the landscapes, the vastness of the landscape. And yeah, so I signed up and did it in 2019. Mm-hmm. That was truly a life-changing experience for me, I have to say. Like, not for the fact of completing an ultra-distance race, just the experience of the people I met there, the organization of that race, the place itself, and getting to know people like Nelson Trees, who's the organizer of that race. Kind of, like, made it clear to me that this felt like home. And since then, well, I'm doing, like, 5 to 6 races a year, and kind of got into the lucky spot of trying to make a living out of that GraphGraph.
Yeah, so that's very interesting journey. Sometimes people wonder, how do you go, you know, from runner. I also did trail running, and it was kind of the same experiences. Like, I can only run a certain distance without getting injured, but cycling, you kind of can do it forever and you can explore more. So you do this transition into cycling, then from bikepacking or just adventure cycling into racing. That's very interesting. And sometimes people ask me, how do you make this transition? Why race it instead of bikepack it? And now I find myself looking back, you know, now I do some of the races and I'm like, I wish I would bikepack it instead of racing. Do you find the same? What is the appeal of racing something like an event instead of just bikepacking the route?
So they're completely different things for me. I love bikepacking and I love exploring new areas. So that's also, so basically my work with GraphGraph is completely different than what I do when I go racing. For the simple reason that I say, like, okay, like, I am very obsessed with progress and I really like to do things the best way that I can. And if I ride a bike, I try to be like as efficient and fast as possible as I possibly can. Which, you know, like, we're both with Silka. So, you know, like, discussing with Josh and Kike, what would be the best strategy to wax your chain during a race or not waxing a chain during the race, because it's actually faster to do it in another way, like, you know, completely nerdy and I don't
marginal gains.
But, you know, like, it fascinates me and I'm really fascinated by the progress I do each year. Like, I'm getting better every year. And I still see a lot, and the experience is completely different, because even riding through a beautiful landscape at night, it looks completely different than during the day. Sometimes I wish I would see it during the day, but still it will be like a very memorable experience. And then the touring backpacking part, well, that's, I go into that with a completely different mindset. There are two different things. That I would pack my bike differently. I would bring different stuff. And, well, of course, I will stop and get ice cream and stuff, which I wouldn't do during the race. So I can do both, and I'm really happy to do both.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's a kind of a different experience. And you've done some adventure races, as you mentioned, Silk Road, Hellenic Mountain Race, also Reno Run. How do you decide, like races you want to participate in? Is because of the course, the difficulty, the landscape? You've gone through some beautiful places.
Yeah.
What drives you to want to make sign up for a race like this?
So mostly I look for really unique places and courses. Mostly that means that I will go to races that have a predefined course. I really love route planning, which is another part that's more like on the touring bikepacking side, for me at least personally. But predefined courses means you will probably have less traffic and less dangerous spaces. And, well, I trust the organizers to, like, do the best to show you something that's really unique on this planet. And then that also means, like, for me, most of the time, that means going to off-road races. So the more remote, the more, vast that landscape is, I really love to go into like high alpine mountainous areas, but I also love deserts for some reason. We always have this image of deserts being like a dead space of land and it's just like nothing, but apparently like deserts can be so unique in every single way. There's a lot of like really enduring organisms that live in deserts, and it's a landscape that will really like force you into like looking for things, because, you know, like you will discover a lot of things in the desert that you would have never. So it's different, but most of the times it's very remote and mountainous landscapes.
You see a lot of ultra racers going from road into more off-road races. Like, for example, I saw you did a TCR number 8 and now you're doing more like off-road races. Why is that? What is about off-road racing that kind of becomes more appealing than racing on road? Is the adventure feeling, is like feeling like you are off the grid, or?
I don't really know if there's really a shift. I feel that if we look at the pure number of events and the participants, then the road ultra distance races will still have a larger audience, so to say. But for sure, like a lot of really good athletes, like Ulrich, for example, they shift to off-road and have great success there as well. Not all of them. Obviously, it's a bit more technical. You need to be, well, good in handling your bike.
I learned that.
But you will get to more remote places. You will have different challenges. In my opinion, it's less dangerous than going on roads. There's a biologist in Slovenia, which I talked to about like the Rhino Run, like, because I saw this map with the leopard populations across Namibia.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, how do I deal with them? Like, how do I look for sleep places? How, you know, I was really afraid of getting attacked by a leopard. I was just like, your problem are not leopards. Your problem are humans. And unfortunately, that's the truth in most cases. So off-road races will give you like this really vast experience, and you will discover landscapes that you would never reach, usually never even by walking in Kyrgyzstan. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're 250 kilometers without any civilization.
Mm-hmm. And touching on what you said about off-road versus road, about preparation, like, do you feel it makes more of a difference to be an experienced cyclist in off-road races than road? I experienced that myself, like ultra on road. I think I can be kind of competitive because I can compensate for my lack of experience and skills by being efficient. But off-road is a completely different game because I have to walk a lot of things that other people can ride because they've been doing mountain biking, etc. since they were children. Yeah. And I just have to walk it. Do you think in this regard, maybe off-road ultra racing is a bit less accessible to beginner cyclists than the road version?
Yes and no. It depends on the race. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't recommend to anyone doing a Silk Road as a first one. although I did it, but that's, yeah. But if you would go for one of the really hard and long road races, there's also a lot of things that you need to do really good. Because, for example, I think like when you did the TCR, you had this mistake where you couldn't take that tunnel, right? And you had to get back. So, you know, like there's different challenges in those kind of things, and it's never easy. Like a lot of the traits that you need to have to be successful in riding long distances are shared, like self-organization, problem solving, you know, like a bit mindset juggling, that you're kind of like not falling into lows like all the time or giving up too easy. So those things are the same. I really like technical mountain biking. And some people don't, or some people are not as confident. It's also a bit about taking risks, you know, like I'm probably more likely to get off the bike in a really technical downhill, while people like Justinas are like, oh no, I'm going to ride down here.
Yeah.
That's, everyone's a bit different in that. You can't just say black and white. I would say that, you know, like I will never be a good road ultra endurance cyclist. It's not really according to what I'm good at.
Yeah, exactly. And what you were saying about route planning, I mean, you create a lot of routes for the cycling community, Graph and everything. How do you plan the routes? How do you decide where you gonna go? I guess I had the experience sometimes with different softwares. One works better in certain countries than other. I don't know, what's your approach when trying to kind of design your next adventure?
Well, first of all, there needs to be something that's really interesting to me to go to a certain area. So, for example, with the Lynx Trail that we designed, it was about this project called IFLynx, which is a European project that rewilders lynx into the Dinaric Alps.
Oh, wow.
And we wanted to donate money to them originally, but they said we can't receive money. So they said, like, oh, let's do a special project and we can do like a bike trail to inform people on lynx and other large carnivores. So that was the initial thought, like, okay, like I'm going to that area. Then I would probably look on the map, what kind of landscape do I see there? What are the most accessible places, like bigger cities where I can get with public transport and stuff?
Yeah.
And then I will plan along like certain landmarks and double check with different map layers like OSM or satellite imagery to try and define like what kind of terrain and how rideable will that be.
Mm-hmm.
And then you will do like 5 or 6 scouting trips and change around all the time before you, well, in sometimes it's a community driven thing, so it's not really a publicly approved route and it doesn't really matter. Sometimes if we do official work, then we need to pass it through the forest workers, through the rangers and hunters and stuff, national parks if involved, to get approval that we can actually make this an official route, which then is something that people don't usually have to do, fortunately. But yeah, like it's really like a mix of things, like trying to find routes from other people, trying to find reports on the area, trying to find landmarks, and then using all of the amazing map and satellite data that we have across the planet, just, you know, to try and make up something that really interests you in a certain way.
Oh, that sounds very interesting. And I mean, you've done so many routes and races. Which ones would you say are your top five, like routes you scouted or races you've done that you're like, oh, I will do it like bikepacking, or it's been one of the most amazing ones? Like,
That's a good question. I would really like to bikepack the Hellenic Mountain Race route again, because we had horrible weather.
I heard.
We went quite fast, and I was probably like most surprised by that route because I didn't expect such a remote landscape in Europe directly. Yeah. So the Pindus Mountains are really something that struck me as being like far more remote and wild than the Alps, actually. So that was really cool. I always go back to Kyrgyzstan for all of the rounds. It's a special country. I'd love to backpack through Morocco and parts of Africa again.
Have you done the Atlas Mountain Race?
I have the triple, the Nelson triple.
Yeah, I think there is also a race that the weather conditions change a lot, no? So you have, I mean, you've done some races that, you never know what you can encounter, like heat, from heat to freezing. How do you prepare for that? Like, what equipment you take and what consideration you go through when deciding about your gear for these kind of events or conditions?
Well, so first of all, you would probably look at the route and where it goes through. So if it's like an Atlas Mountain race, you will see like, okay, like it goes from the sea in the north of Africa, which is probably even in February quite warm, into the Atlas Mountains in parts like way above 2000 meters. So it might be cold as well. And then, yeah, you already get a bit of a feeling like, okay, like with all the elevation differences, the different landscapes from semi-desert to marine temperatures, you probably want to get like a wider range of clothes, and then you can use like weather data, like get historic weather data or average temperatures and stuff, follow that a bit and make some decisions. Sometimes then you know what would have been the sensible decision, but you pack a bit less because you want to be more competitive.
Yeah.
That's the risk factor, I guess. But yeah, like mostly just like doing my research before the races. And that's part of the the thing that really excites me about those races, just needing to like really dig into it and finding the best setup for myself is really something that makes the sport so unique. You don't have support car that just hands you a jacket if you're cold.
Yes, exactly. And talking about gear, any like your favorite item, like you say, oh, this like no matter the race, I always bring it with me.
Yeah. Polar Tech insulated jackets. Like, it's such a game changer. Because they're like so small and packable. Seven Mesh, who sponsor me with clothing, they do this Polar Tech insulated jacket, which you can strap onto your handlebar. Oh. So you always have it super handy. And it's so small. It's such a small and light piece of equipment. But if you put it on, you'll be warm. So that's something that's, if we would have had that like 10, 15 years ago, I would never want to miss it again. And it's a lot of small comfort items, like light and packable rain jackets, because obviously like a shell, like a rain jacket, will also protect you from wind. So you can use it in many ways.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I think like those really small insulated jackets are the most game changing thing in terms of how can I pack my bike and how much stuff do I need to bring, you know, like so much less things that you have on the bike these days.
Yeah, exactly. And I've seen some of your reviews about packing and certain items. So would you sacrifice comfort for lightweight and performance? What's your approach? More on the safe side or more on like, okay, lightweight and let's see what happens?
It depends on the race. Sometimes I'm more ready to take a few more risks. So Hellenic Mountain Race, for example, is one of those examples where I packed super, super light. But even in the Hellenic, I packed a sleeping bag that was rated way too low temperature for what we actually expected, which was kind of my peace of mind. Because going like really, really over the edge is also like a psychological thing. If something goes wrong, you will probably not feel too comfortable, like really going to your limit.
Yeah.
So it's somewhere in between. I wouldn't sacrifice all of the security that it brings and the comfort. But of course, I'm not bringing a 20 kilo bike.
Yeah. And talking about bikes, what bikes are you currently using for like road or off-road? Tell us a bit about your setup.
Obviously, I'm very happy to be sponsored by Cervelo and Reserve. So I have access to like really great materials. So most of the time in the off-road races, I use a ZHT5, which is a hardtail mountain bike. It's incredibly light. It's progressive geometry that really feels safe in every terrain. And it's basically like, it's taking like at least 70% of my time on the bike now.
Oh, wow.
Then the Swiss Army knife is kind of like a gravel bike, a Cervelo Aspero. It's controversial. Like it's basically, I think it should have become a road bike, but it takes wider tires.
Yeah.
So to say, but I kind of love that. It's surely not for everyone. It's like a really stiff bike and you can't just fit like 50 mil tires or something in it. But me, the handling and everything is just really great. And I love a responsive and stiff bike. And for me, it's kind of with the geometry it has, I can use it on road and I can use it on gravel. Don't really feel too much of a disadvantage on either of them. And then on the road at the moment, I'm riding a Caledonia 5, which is, your classic endurance road bike. And, you know, like also breaking that stigmata because one that's sponsored by any bike brand will use the endurance bike. Because, like, it's not the sporty one, but actually the Caledonia is a super fast and capable bike.
Yeah.
If you follow me, you will see sometimes up climbs that are surely capable of being like top notch, and you wouldn't do that with a bike that's just for for recreative cyclists.
Exactly. The endurance world is a bit like, oh, people think it's a bit, it's not fast, etc. But for some people, actually, it might be faster. If you are comfortable and you are, you know, then you can ride for longer and faster than if you have pain after a few kilometers in a very stiff road bike. So for some people, might actually better, more suitable for their needs. But it's interesting, you have an endurance bike, but you will also, even though you have an endurance bike, will still use the Cervelo Aspero on road. That's very interesting. I don't know. I actually had the Cervelo Aspero, but I felt it was a bit not very reactive on road. I put road tires and I still felt like, even an endurance bike was immediately like more going on rails, on corners, but I still felt like the Aspero, even though it's kind of like a race gravel bike, it was not very responsive on road. It was, I don't know, what's your thoughts about that?
There's no bike that does all.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen. That's the unfortunate truth, because road bikes have a very short wheelbase usually to be that reactive and responsive. And if you need to pack more tire clearance into a bike, then you will widen that wheelbase, which makes it less reactive.
Mm-hmm.
Some bikes like the Aspero have like a flip chip in the fork, so you can actually decrease the wheelbase if you're going with a more road-oriented wheel set. But it will not make up for having you a perfect road bike. That being said, the Caledonia in itself, like in the geometry, is more relaxed from a geometry point than the Aspero. Like, it's more aggressive. It's kind of fun. It's not the same. And you will not. I wouldn't, if I would do some really long road race again, I would surely not go for the Aspero. I would still choose a specific road bike.
Yeah. But
for me, a great benefit is being able to still use it on road and having fun. It doesn't feel like a chore.
Exactly. I think sometimes if you want one bike to do it all, you have to make compromises. But when you have a bike that is more specific to the terrain. And talking about bikes, you see a lot of people using hardtail mountain bikes for gravel races. And some of them say, it's much faster. And for some kind of gravel races, I think so. Like, for example, you've done Badlands. Like, I was like, okay, a lot of parts I cannot ride it really fast on a gravel bike, because you are like trying to avoid all the rocks, but you could just like ride over it with a mountain bike. What's your thought about that? Because you see more and more people choosing to go for mountain bikes instead of gravel bikes, even if it's, the race is called a gravel race. Sometimes I have my inner debate about this, like, is this really a gravel race?
Well, you know, like, there's multiple factors to this. Like, how is that gravel race structured? If it's I recently did like one of those UCI gravel races, and I was like, well, I could use the road bike for this.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, sometimes you will have a gravel race, like now Bordobesh Aragon, the Epic Bash route for sure has some really technical parts in it. And I feel that's like two directions that the whole community goes. And then the other point that goes to it is that mountain bikes have massively progressed in the last years. And of course, they're incredibly fast. So you have more volume in your tires, which means you're a bit more comfortable. You have more traction. You can use like a rigid fork and still, you know, like make the bike comparably from a weight perspective to a gravel bike.
Yeah.
You can put drop bars on mountain bikes. Like, you know, like, you can nerd into this as much as you want. And then if this is the bike that you want to go for, that's great. And I like that in the gravel space, we're still open enough to allow that. Because, you know, like, over regulatory might mean like, oh, you can only use that bike. You cannot do this and that. And, well, I love seeing those weird conversions. I'm always like interested to see those things. I haven't used a mountain bike in a gravel race so far. I didn't feel the need for it. But yeah, like I see the point. Like sometimes Silk Road this year, for example, we had Justinas in third place on the drop bar mountain bike conversion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, like those become more traction. There's surely some benefit of those in certain areas. While in a real gravel race like Badlands, in most of the parts, you will be better off with a normal gravel bike, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Depends.
Yeah, I think it really depends also about your level of skill. I found doing some of the recon for the Badlands route. If you are a skilled rider, you can compensate the lack of travel or everything by using your body, your skills, you know. Then a gravel bike is faster. But I found as a beginner in gravel that if I would have had a mountain bike, I would have been faster because I wouldn't have to like, you know, I was like every time there was a huge rock, I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to fall or try and, you know, reduce the speed. If I was on a mountain bike, I would have just gone over it. I think, the using a gravel bike versus a mountain bike. Also, they are your level of skill and using your abilities to compensate for what the bike lacks in that terrain is really key.
If you take more speed, you will probably feel more comfortable also. Like it's fortunate, but you know, like you will be like way less stable the less speed you carry. So that's also a lot of problems with unexperienced riders that of course they don't want to go as fast because they don't feel as capable, but then they're also like becoming way more unstable in their balance.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a big discrepancy in the speed that riders can carry through technical sections. Probably not a bike that was designed for that kind of terrain.
Yeah, exactly. And so you're traveling soon to Girona. Any exciting plans or events coming up this year?
Yeah, well, so Borobudur Aragon obviously is like a friend's event. Andre is a friend since years. We've done so many things together. Of course, I need to be at his event. Also, we'll hold a small talk there about the things that I do. Then I will stay in Girona for a bit because I can't really support traveling back and forth that many times. Co-work there. And we'll do the Trucker 560 with...
Oh. All that's nice.
Guys that go really fast.
I will do that one, but I won't be going fast. I changed my expectations to try to survive. I was like, I will try to compete. I will try to survive.
I was told it's the unofficial 24-hour worlds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think it would be a very interesting event because the first part, there's a lot of climbing and you go into the mountains, but the second part is not very technical. So it would be interesting to see how people approach it because you can go really fast and kind of overdo it. And then the last part seems to be really fast, like a smooth gravel. So also the 24-hour events are kind of interesting that distance because it's not long enough that you have to sleep, but it's not that short. So it's really like it puts a toll on your body because actually the longer the event sometimes is easier because people have to sleep. And this one, it's like, okay, you just have to go for it. So it can be challenging. Yeah.
I'm not sure if we can make enough of a selection in the hilly part. On the big guys, there's some really strong and heavy riders coming who have a lot more muscle mass and absolute power.
Yeah.
But I'll do my best.
Yeah. And one question about Traka, which tires are you planning to use?
Probably like Cinturato H hard pack from Pirelli. 4-wheel tires. I feel very comfortable on them. They roll really quick and yeah, don't have any problems with them. And then because I use like very wide rims, they really spread out a bit longer, wider, and yeah, so I have like a lot of volume and a lot of traction.
No, that's cool. And besides Traka, any other events after that this year? So
afterwards, I will travel to Scotland for the Highland Trail 550.
Oh, wow.
I'm competing again against Sofiane. Like, we're following each other through the whole season, it seems.
Yeah.
And then I'm a bit undecided. Either I would return to Kyrgyzstan for another time, Silk Road.
Mm-hmm.
But depends if I can make the financing. Otherwise, I would go to further Le Chemin, La Liberté in the Pyrenees.
Yeah.
Also something that really excites me because the first 500 kilometers are road and the second 500 are probably more like endurance mountain bike, like enduro mountain biking.
Yeah, seems like a hard one, right? And not many people finish in one of the editions, I think, because the terrain was challenging.
Races, yeah. So that might be the case for drop bar mountain bike for me. Let's see. And then probably I will also be at the Orbit Gravity Festival in Berlin. And maybe sneak peeks if I can make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Before, of course, I need to somehow kickstart my own event again with the Loop in September. So it's a lot of stuff going on this year. And we also need to work on a lot of new bikepacking routes that we're designing. So hopefully I can at least launch one of them this year.
That's really cool. And talking about community, do you think you see many people, for example, think one of the challenges is on gravel is that people don't want to go to remote places alone. So maybe having this kind of community events that they can go also with people that are just getting into it is really helpful. Do you find that like a lot of beginner cyclists or people wanting to get into adventure feel more comfortable if they go to an event rather than starting to do it by themselves?
It can help. It depends on the structure of the event. So, for example, the Komoot Women's Rally are a great effort to foster diversity in a sport that's unfortunately still not very diverse in many ways, not only with female athletes, but also with BIPOC and LGBTQ athletes.
Mm-hmm.
So that can really help to like create like a certain sense of safety and provide some guidance. Then, yeah, I don't know, like in a certain way, like I personally didn't pursue the way of doing too many in-person events because they're a really limiting factor in how many things I can do per year. So in this moment, I'm trying to create as much infrastructure across Europe as I can. Mm-hmm. And then maybe in the future, I would be open to do stuff like this and really like connect more with people in person because it's important. And I really love those encounters because, you know, like people know you over weird Instagram stories or whatever, they don't really know who you are, and you can't really express all the things that are going on if you're not really talking in person.
Yeah, it's a completely different experience. For our listeners and viewers, where can they find your routes, events? graphgraph.cc?
Yeah, so graphgraph.cc is the online platform where we're trying to create the largest infrastructure of bikepacking routes or in general cycling routes for all kinds of bikes across Europe, and therefore trying to create like an infrastructure change in general so people travel more by bike instead of taking their cars or whatever. And the same thing exists on Instagram. We have several other accounts specific for the Lynx Trail, for example, for the educational bikepacking route on Lynx, for the Loop for the event, which I need to reactivate.
Yeah. And
myself, you can find me under Clannery's on Instagram for my personal things that I do.
That's great. I will leave all the links in the description. Well, thank you very much for joining, Max. Looking forward to see you then in Traka 560.
Yeah, thank you. Can't wait to get on with that.